asked Moss. I don't know. Barbara started. She broke down, heaving and crying. It's okay, said Erica, reaching out across the dark table to take Barbara's hand. She flinched and pulled it away. So what happened? Erica continued. Igor was arrested.
Yes, it went to trial, said Barbara.
Erica looked across at Moss. Even in the darkness, she could see the shock registered on her face. Trial? What trial? We have no record. What happened?
The prosecution's case collapsed. There wasn't enough solid evidence. The jury couldn't rule either way. I think Igor got to some of the other witnesses. He knows too many people.
Barbara now looked blank.
I realize how I must come across, the terrible things I've done. I know what a terrible person I am, all from loving a man, she said.
Erica and Moss were silent.
When I saw those girls on the news, when you made your appeal, I remembered one of them, Tatiana. When she arrived in London, she was so excited, and I had to speak to you. You have to get the bastard.
Have you seen Andrea since? Asked Moss. Barbara shifted uncomfortably.
Yes.
Was it the night of the 8th of January in a pub called the Glue Pot? Asked Erica.
Yes.
Was Igor with her?
What? No, I never would have gone near her if...
Was he there?
No,
said Erica. Moss shot her a look. Why were you there in London? You're in the witness protection program.
I go to London every month to visit my mother's grave. I tidy and I lay fresh flowers. Do you know how hard it is to be a stranger, to have a new identity? I texted Andrea, thinking we could meet for a coffee. I know it was stupid, but Andrea kept changing where we were going to meet, and I know I shouldn't have gone, but I missed her.
Moss was finding it hard to mask her disbelief.
We only met for a little bit. She was on her own. She said she was meeting a new boyfriend later on. It was like nothing had ever happened with her. She wasn't surprised that I'd vanished, and that now I was back. She didn't care.
When did you leave the Glue Pot?
I don't know, before 8. I knew there was a train from London to Liverpool Street just before 9.
And you didn't see anyone else?
No. Andrea said she was going to have a drink at the bar. There was a girl working. I wanted to say to her, watch out. That was me once, but I didn't.
But all this, we'll need you to go on record, Barbara. Barbara was suddenly silent. When she spoke, her voice sounded far away.
I've had my mobile phone on recording this, she said, handing her phone over. I have a little more to tell you, but first I really need to use the bathroom.
Really? It's dark and...
Please, I have to,
she repeated urgently. Okay, well, don't stray too far. We'll be here, said Erica. Here, use this little torch, said Moss, pulling one out of her coat pocket. Barbara took it, got up, and went off into the undergrowth. The thunder was rumbling now with increased frequency. A flash of lightning lit up the inside of the clearing. I'm calling Peterson, said Erica. When she comes back, we should make a move. Take her back to London. I mean, she's just revealed herself, so the new identity is no use. I don't know the procedure for any of this. Jesus, boss, what about that trial? There is no record of George Mitchell or Igor Kucherov. And when they ran the photo of him through the national database, nothing came back. I don't like it. This is getting weird. Erica nodded and lit a cigarette. We need to confirm her new identity, then cross-check all she's told us. Another complex twist in the murder of Andrea Douglas Brown, said Moss. Erica looked at the phone for the first time and fiddled with the buttons, managing to play back a little of Barbara's voice. We've got her on record. It's grounds to bring this George Mitchell or Igor Kucherov in. We need an address from her when she gets back, said Erica. Moss got on her phone and called Peterson, trying to explain where they were, but the signal was bad. It's breaking up, boss. I can't get through. Thunder rumbled and a flash of lightning lit up the sky above. Jesus, she cried. I'm not using my bloody mobile when there's lightning above. Peterson can wait. Okay, calm down. Let me try, snapped Erica. She tried her phone and then Moss's again, but but there was no signal. The call wouldn't even go through. A strange creeping feeling was crawling over her. "She's been gone a long time for a pee," said Moss. The light from Erica's phone cast a glow across their faces. They jumped up at the same time and moved in the direction where Barbara had left the clearing, ducking under a large branch. They pushed through some dead brambles and came back out onto the long track. Rain began to pelt them as they left the shelter of the trees. Lightning flashed, and then they saw up ahead a tall tree with several long branches. A rope creaked and swung, and on the end of a noose hung Barbara. Her feet were still, and her body swung in the breeze. Chapter 59. The rain had become torrential, roaring on the treetops and turning the muddy track to a blur of white. Thunder rumbled, and flashes of lightning illuminated Barbara where she hung with her eyes open, folds of skin around her neck bunched up by the rope under her chin. Moss attempted to climb the tree, but the rain hampered her efforts. "Stop, come down!" shouted Erica above the noise. "It's too late, she's dead. Go back to Peterson and call for backup, I'll stay here." "You sure, boss?" shouted Moss above the roar of the rain. "Yes, go!" shouted Erica. Moss ran off into the trees and Erica waited. She paced up and down in the mud, not caring that she was getting wet. Her mind was whirring. The further they dug into this case, the more complex it became. The storm seemed to be right above. The rain roared and the air fizzed with electricity. Erica was forced to stand under the tree, putting the thick trunk between her and the body. Eventually the rain slowed, and the storm began to move on. She was trying to find a signal on her phone when she heard the sound of a police siren. A squad car appeared far up the track and slowly made its way towards her, its wheels churning up the waterlogged mud. Two young male officers got out, and Erica walked to meet them, holding up her ID. They looked up at Barbara's body. "You haven't touched anything. We need to secure the area," one of them said. "It was suicide," said Erica. "She was with us before she did it." It was several hours before Erica, Moss, and Peterson were cleared to leave the scene. The fact that Barbara had been in witness protection had hampered efforts to discover who she was. It was getting dark as they drove back towards London. Erica and Moss filled Peterson in on the details. "So this Igor Kucherov is responsible for the deaths of Andrea, the three Eastern European girls, and Ivy?" asked Peterson. "And the girl he killed at Barbara's house, the one he stashed in the sports bag." "He was arrested for this and went to trial, and he's not in any system or database?"
"He's not in any system as George Mitchell," said Erica. On cue there was a hiss and a beep as Crane came over the radio.
"Boss, we found an address for Igor Kucherov from the council tax records. He lives in Kilburn. He's 37, of Romanian-Russian descent. He's married too. House is in the wife's name, a Rebecca Kucherov. They've got a 5-year-old son."
"Jesus," said Moss.
"How long has he been married?" asked Erica.
10 years, said Crane. "Any employment history?"
"He runs a landscape garden maintenance business. He's down as director, but the company is in his wife's name. We're just running our computers to find out if he had any contracts in the locations where the dead girls were found."
There was a pause.
"Do you want us to bring him in?" asked Crane.
Erica looked at the clock glowing on the dashboard. It was past 5 p.m.
"We should be back in London in about 2 hours, said Peterson, reading her mind.
"No, hold off bringing him in. I want to be ready for him. Put a surveillance team outside his house. Don't let him know you're there and keep him in sight."
"Yes, boss."
"We'll be back at Lewisham Row in a couple of hours. In the meantime, I want everything you can find on him. Bank statements, emails, companies he owns, any bankruptcy. Also, check out the wife, full profile. I bet anything else he's hiding stuff in her name, too.
And try to unlock the new identity they gave Barbara Kardoshova.
Now she's dead, it should be easier."
"We're already working on it," said Crane. He added, "Are you all okay? We heard she topped herself right in front of you."
"We're fine," said Erica.
"Now get off this radio and concentrate on Igor Kucherov."
Outside the car, it was pitch black. The fields and fens around them were invisible. There were no moon or stars, and barely any light pollution, just the road in front, illuminated by the arc of the headlights. Erica longed to get far away from the bleakness of the ferns,
from where Barbara's body had swung, creaking from the tree. She needed to be back in the city, where buildings crowded around her, where there was noise and time didn't stand still. She pulled down the mirror above the passenger seat and its light flicked on. She saw she had mud on her face. Peterson's reflection stared back from behind, bathed in the light.
"It doesn't get any easier, does it, boss, seeing a dead body?" he said.
"No, it doesn't," said Erica. She wiped at the mud with a tissue and then snapped the mirror shut, plunging the interior of the car back into darkness. They rode the rest of the way back in silence, conserving their energy for the night ahead. Chapter 60. Erica, Moss and Peterson arrived back at Lewisham Row Station just after 7 p.m. The torrential rain had moved with them during the journey back from Norfolk and was pelting the car park as they dashed into the reception area. They were met by Crane, who buzzed them through from reception. Erica was impressed to see that the full team had stayed and the incident room buzzed with activity.
"Good evening, everyone. I take it that Crane has briefed you on what happened?" said Erica.
There was a murmured nodding.
"Good, now, what can you give me?"
One of the officers had brought up some towels from the police gym in the basement and threw one each to Moss, Peterson and Erica. They took them gratefully.
"We've gone back through records and found that the girl who was found dumped in the sports bag was 17-year-old Nadia Greco. A trial was held in Southwark Crown Court," explained Crane.
"And?" asked Erica, rubbing at her hair with the towel.
"And this is where it gets weird, boss. The trial records have been marked as CMP, Closed Material Procedures."
"What?" asked Erica.
"Why would Igor Kucherov's trial be put on the same legal footing as a classified secret intelligence trial?"
"I don't know. As I said, very little is available. The transcripts have been redacted, names blanked out," said Crane.
"How do we know it's his case, then?"
"It matches the keyword search I did for the murder. The location where the body was found and the details of the victim weren't classified."
"Are there any details of the trial verdict?"
asked Erica.
"It says that the trial collapsed due to insufficient evidence."
"And there's no record of an arrest for an Igor Kucherov or a George Mitchell?"
"No. We've done a Google search on Igor Kucherov, and several of the search results have been removed under the European Data Protection Law. And if Igor Kucherov had a record, it's been wiped. There's nothing for him, or for a George Mitchell in the database."
"I don't like the sound of this."
"We're going to keep working, boss."
"What about unlocking Barbara Kardoshova's real identity?"
"We're working on it now, but the courts won't open until 9 a.m. tomorrow. Witness protection is a highly secretive department. They work on a different computer network."
There was a silence. Erica stood and went over to the whiteboards, where photos of all the victims were pinned up. There were also CCTV stills of Andrea's last sighting, when she had boarded the train. And next to these was the photo taken of her with George Mitchell, now known as Igor Kucherov. There was also a new photo of Igor Kucherov, taken from his driving license.
And at the end were family photos of the Douglas Browns on holiday with Barbara Kardoshova, before she'd cut her hair short and dyed it blonde, and vanished in the witness protection scheme.
"Okay, I know it's been a long day," said Erica, turning back to face the room. "But we need to get out our spades and start digging. I'm asking a big favour of you all, and I'd like to work on for a few more hours. I want to go back to basics and go over everything to do with this case with a fine-tooth comb. Everything. I'll order in food, coffee and buying. We just have to find something. There's a link between Andrea Douglas Brown, Igor Kucherov and the rest of the murders. We need to find it, and it could be the tiniest thing we've missed. As I always say, there are no stupid questions. Now, with this trial being classified, we're dipping our toes into dangerous waters here. But don't be afraid to dig deep, in particular with Sir Simon. He was off limits before, but he isn't now.
We have Barbara Kardoshova's recorded statement.
I'll get it uploaded to the intranet. Now, who's willing to stay?"
Erica looked expectantly at the full incident room. Slowly people put their hands in the air. She looked at Moss, who grinned and raised her hand, as did Peterson.
If I wasn't such a bitter old cow, I'd kiss you all. Thank you. Right, let's make the next few hours count and get to it.
The officers in the incident room sprang into action. Where did you get those doughnuts from last time? Asked Crane, coming over with a pile of files.
Krispy Kreme, you have free rein to order, said Erica. Where's Marsh?
He left early. He's got the weekend off, taking his missus to some kind of art retreat, said Crane.
I didn't know he was into painting too, said Erica.
No, he's dropping her off. It's in Cornwall. I think he's getting some tonight, though. He's told us he's not on call, under any circumstances.
Typical. We're at a crucial point in our investigation, and he decides to bugger off on a mini-break.
You want me to get him on the phone? Asked Crane.
No, hold off contacting Superintendent Marsh, said Erica, realizing that this could work to her advantage.
Chapter 61. The next morning, Chief Superintendent Marsh lay with Marcy in a beautiful hotel room. The name of the hotel escaped him, but he knew it was far from London, with a sweeping view of Dartmoor. Her head lay on his bare chest, and he had that warm post-coital rush. The feel and smell of his wife's skin was intoxicating. It was now light, and they'd woken from a night of repeated lovemaking, something unheard of since the twins had come along. The phone beside the bed screamed out, breaking the silence. Marsh rolled over and saw it was 9:30 in the morning. He reached over, lifted the receiver and dropped it down into the cradle again.
"Did you order a wake-up call?"
murmured Marcy.
"Course not," he said.
"Oh, that turns me on the most. You not answering the phone,"
purred Marcy. She kissed him, sliding her hand down over his stomach.
The phone rang again.
Marsh cursed, rolled over and yanked the cord from its plug on the wall. He rolled back to her and grinned.
"I believe you were about here,"
he said, placing her hand on his growing erection.
"Again, Chief Superintendent," she grinned.
Suddenly there was a hammering on the door.
"Sorry, hello, it's the front desk,"
came a voice.
"What the hell?"
exclaimed Marsh, as Marcy was poised to unroll a condom over the head of his stiff cock.
"Tell him to piss off. This is the last one in the pack," said Marcy.
The hammering came again.
"Sir, sir,"
quavered the voice of the young boy from the front desk.
"I know you said not to bother you under any circumstances, but there's an Assistant Commissioner Oakley waiting on the line, on your phone, sir. He says if you don't pick up, there will be consequences. That's me quoting him. That's what he said."
Marsh leapt out of bed and scrabbled to reconnect the phone in the wall socket.
"Where the hell have you been, Marsh? We have a situation,"
snapped Oakley, when Marsh picked up the phone. "I'm sorry, sir, I didn't know it was you."
"One of your officers, that bloody Foster woman, showed up on Sir Simon Douglas Brown's doorstep at 5 this morning with an armed response unit. She's taken him and his daughter Linda into custody. She's taken Giles Osborne into custody too."
"What the hell?"
"Now I'm up in Scotland, Marsh, on a much-needed bloody holiday, and I do not want to have to return to London. I trust you will rectify this."
"I will, sir."
"You'd better. I don't often get woken up before 9 by someone from the bloody Cabinet Office. Heads will roll on this one if we're not careful, Marsh."
The call was abruptly disconnected. Marsh stood there, naked, his penis now shriveled to nothing. He picked up the phone again and dialed, shouting that he wanted to speak to DCI Foster, immediately. Marcy pulled the bedclothes up around her and bit back her tears. This would be yet another holiday ruined by her husband's work.
Chapter 62.
Erica and the rest of the team were struggling after little sleep. They had worked into the early hours piecing the evidence together with the new information. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, they'd experienced a breakthrough. A frenzy of planning had ensued, and at 3 a.m. Erica had sent everyone home to grab a few hours' sleep before they came back at first light to begin the first phase of Erica's plan. It was now 11 a.m, and Erica sat with Moss, Peterson and Crane in the observation suite at Lewisham Row. In front of them were four screens. Each screen showed a police interview room. In interview room 1, Linda Douglas Brown was agitated and paced up and down, wearing a long dark skirt and a vast tea-stained white jumper covered in black kittens. On the next screen in interview room two, her father, Simon Douglas Brown, sat impassively with his hands on the table staring ahead. Despite being pulled out of bed by a group of officers in armed response gear, he had dressed smartly in dark slacks, a freshly ironed blue shirt, and a V-neck jumper. On the next screen was interview room three, where Giles Osborne cut a curious figure. He was dressed in skin-tight bottle-green jeans, his belly barely constrained by a tight T-shirt with a tropical print of palm trees. His greasy hair was parted to one side, and he stared up at the camera. "He hasn't looked away from the camera for 20 minutes," said Crane, tapping his biro against the screen. "The only one who looks like he hasn't got a care in the world is Igor Kucherov," said Erica, watching the screen of interview room four. Igor sat behind the table, slouched back in his chair with his legs spread wide. He'd been working out when the police arrived to arrest him at his house on a pleasant middle-class street in Kilburn. He wore a tight white T-shirt with a Nike tick emblazoned across the front, shiny black Nike running shoes and trainers. His body was lean and muscly, and his skin a baked olive colour. The stubble he had in the pictures with Andrea was gone. His black eyes flicked up and regarded the camera. "Let's have a crack at him first," said Erica. Moss and Crane remained in the observation suite as Erica left with Peterson. They met Igor's solicitor in the corridor, who was a thin, greying man with a neat little moustache. He started to protest as to why his client was being held. "I will be recommending that my client answers none of your questions until you have credible..." They moved past the solicitor and entered interview room four. Igor stayed slouched back in his chair. His black eyes looked Erica up and down as she filed in with Peterson. There was a long tone as the recording equipment kicked in. "It's 11:05 on the morning of January the 24th. I'm Detective Chief Inspector Foster, and with me is Detective Inspector Peterson. Also present is Solicitor John Stevens." Erica and Peterson took a seat opposite Igor and his solicitor. She spent a few moments checking over her paperwork, and then looked up at Igor. "Okay, Mr. Kucherov, or should I call you George Mitchell?"
"Call me what you want, darling," he grinned.
His voice was deep, with a trace of a Russian accent.
"Could you explain why you use two names?"
He shrugged.
"Do you work for MI5 or MI6, or are you a secret agent involved in espionage? Perhaps you've signed the Official Secrets Act."
Igor gave her a lopsided grin and rubbed at his chin.
"No,"
he said finally.
"I'm sorry, but these are absurd questions," said the solicitor.
"No, these are valid questions. Were you aware, Mr. Stevens, that your client was tried for the murder of a young woman called Nadia Greco? Her decomposing body was found dumped in a quarry, zipped up in a holdall." Erica pushed a photo of Nadia across the table. Her bloated, blackened body could be seen through the open folds of the holdall.
"The holdall was traced back to Mr. Kucherov's then-girlfriend, Barbara Kardosheva. Nadia Greco had been beaten to death at Barbara's house. Igor's DNA was found at the scene, and Barbara testified against him at a subsequent trial. However, the jury failed to reach a verdict and the trial collapsed."
The solicitor glanced to one side at Igor.
"Prove it,"
said Igor, shrugging.
"That's the problem, Igor. The records and transcripts from your trial are now marked a CMP, Closed Material Procedures. This classification is only reserved for criminal trials involving matters that could damage national security. Are you aware of this, Mr. Stevens?"
"I'm aware of what closed material procedures are, yes," said the solicitor, flustered.
"So you'll understand how unusual this is, that this restriction was imposed on your client's murder trial when he has nothing to do with the Secret Service," finished Erica.
Igor stretched his arms above his head, then moved his neck from side to side with a crack of his joints.
"Maybe I'll look a bit like James Bond," said Igor.
"No, we don't see that when we look at you,"
said Peterson coldly.
"Don't look so sour, mate. Aren't they always talking about having a black James Bond?"
"You could still be in with a chance," replied Igor.
Peterson paused and slid the photo of Nadia Greco's body closer. "Please look at the photo. Do you recognize this girl?" he asked. "I'm advising my client not to answer that," said Stevens.
"Okay. How about this photo? This is you and Andrea Douglas Brown. Are you aware of the Douglas Brown murder? This photo was taken 4 days before she died, and this, and this."
Peterson pushed the series of photos across the table, starting with Igor and Andrea standing together outside the Horniman Museum grounds and moving to the sexually explicit pictures. Igor pursed his lips and sat back.
"This is the same Andrea Douglas Brown who was found murdered."
"Yes, we're all aware of who she is," snapped the solicitor. "Are you charging my client with her murder?"
Erica ignored him. "You were seen with Andrea just hours before she died at the Glue Pop Pub in Forest Hill."
"I don't have to answer your questions. I want to leave," said Igor, getting up from his chair.
"Sit down," said Erica.
He pursed his lips and folded his arms, still standing.
"And you do have to answer my questions. As I said, you were seen with Andrea."
"No, I wasn't seen anywhere. Because I wasn't in the UK the night Andrea went missing. I was in Romania from the 31st December to the 15th of January. I have tickets, and you can check my passport records."
"Is that the records of you or George Mitchell?"
"You know, it's not against the law to change your name," said Igor.
"You're Slovak, yes? And you have a name like Foster?"
"It's my married name," said Erica.
"Married?"
asked Igor, raising an eyebrow.
"How did that work out?" "I'll ask that you sit down," shouted Erica, slamming her fist down on the table. "If you are going to charge my client," started Mr. Stevens.
Erica stood and left the room.
"DCI Foster has just left the interview room. I'm stopping this interview at 11:12 a.m.
said Peterson, rising, then following her out.
"He's a bastard, isn't he?"
said Erica, when she was outside with Peterson. She was shaking with anger. "I shouldn't have lost it so early with him. He's just so smug. Can you get Crane to check out his alibi, that he was out of the country?"
"Yes, boss. Just don't let him get under your skin. We've only just started. Do you want to go back in?"
Erica took a deep breath and shook her head.
"No, I want to have a crack at Simon Douglas Brown."
Chapter 63. Simon Douglas Brown's solicitor was equally as grey as Mr. Stevens, but he wore a much better suit. He was waiting outside the interview room, straightening his tie.
"We're in here,"
said Erica, pointing to the door of interview room one.
"I'll be advising my client not to answer any of your questions until..." he started.
But Erica and Peterson moved past him. Simon glowered at them as they filed into the interview room.
"Just be aware that when I've finished with you, you'll be directing bloody traffic on the Old Kent Road for the rest of your years on the force."
Erica and Peterson ignored him, and they all sat. She went through the formalities for the tape and then opened a folder in front of her on the table.
"Where is Linda?"
he said.
Erica ignored him. "I have a right to know where my daughter is."
"Linda has been arrested and is here in detention," said Peterson.
"You leave Linda out of this, you hear me? She's not well,"
shouted Simon.
"Not well?
She's under a lot of stress. She's not fit to be interrogated."
"Who informed you that we were going to interrogate her?" asked Erica.
"When police officers rock up at my door at the crack of dawn in riot gear with guns, they don't want a chat. I presume, of course. I'm warning you."
"Your wife is in reception. Where's your son, David?" asked Erica.
"He's on a stag weekend with friends in Prague."
"Where is he staying?"
"I don't know. A pub or hotel. Could be a youth hostel for all I know. It's a stag party."
"A stag party for who?" asked Peterson.
"One of his friends from university is getting married. I can get the information from my secretary. She booked it all."
"We'll do that," said Peterson.
There was a pause as Erica flicked through her file.
"You run several companies in connection with your business and personal affairs, is that correct?"
she asked.
"What a stupid question. Of course that's correct."
"One is called Millgate Limited, yes?"
"Yes."
"And you have another one called Peckinpah?"
"Yes."
"Quantum, Burbridge, Newton Quarry?" The solicitor leaned across the table towards Erica.
I don't see why you feel the need to read this out to my client, DCI Foster. He's well aware of his business interests. These are all public limited companies, and this information is in the public domain.
Simon sat back, alert but furious.
Yes, that's correct, said Erica. I just need confirmation for the tape before I proceed. Sorry to waste your client's valuable time, so I'll ask again.
Yes, 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 is that loud enough for your bloody tape?
I would like to draw your attention to one of your bank statements from the month of September last year.
Erica took a sheet of paper from her folder and laid it on the desk. Simon leant forward.
Hang on. Why do you have this? On whose authority?
On my authority, said Erica.
A payment was made by you to Cosgrove Holdings Limited, which is the registered company behind Yucca Events, Giles Osborne's Yucca Events. The sum was for £46,000.
Erica tapped the figure on the statement with her finger.
Yes, I've invested in the company,
said Simon, sitting back and eyeballing Erica. She took out another bank statement.
I also have one of Giles Osborne's bank statements, for Cosgrove Holdings Limited, for the same date, which shows the £46,000 goes into the account.
Where is this going?
Asked the solicitor. Erica held up her hand and carried on. But on the same day, your £46,000 goes back out again. Simon started to laugh and looked around the room to see if anyone would laugh with him. Peterson remained stony-faced.
Why don't you ask Giles? I'm not involved in the day-to-day running of his company. I'm a sleeping partner.
But you invested £46,000. That's a lot to be just a sleeping partner.
Define a lot. To me, £46,000 is not a vast sum of money. I'm sure for you, with a police salary, it's a lot more.
With that taken into account, surely you and Giles would have at least agreed what your investment would have entailed,
said Erica.
I trust Giles, and if you remember, before the brutal murder of my daughter, I was welcoming Giles into my family as my son-in-law.
Simon's angry mask cracked, and they saw the raw pain from the loss of Andrea.
Okay, so as your son-in-law, did Giles share with you why the £46,000 was paid straight out to a company called Mercury Investments Limited?
Simon looked across at his solicitor.
Yes or no, it's a simple question, said Erica. Yes or no, did Giles share why the £46,000 was paid back out to a company called Mercury Investments Limited?
No.
Do you know of a company called Mercury Investments?
No.
It's registered to a Rebecca Kucherov, wife of this man, Igor Kucherov.
Just in case you need reminding, we recovered Andrea's second mobile phone with these pictures.
Erica took the explicit photos from the folder and laid them out in front of Simon. He glanced down at them. He closed his eyes and began to shake.
The solicitor leant in and started to gather them up.
I object to my client being shown these distressing photos of his daughter, who has only just been buried.
But what does your client have to say about this £46,000? We believe this man, Igor Kucherov, is linked to the illegal trafficking of young Eastern European women to the United Kingdom. He was also tried for the murder of a young girl called Nadia Greco.
Was he convicted?
Asked Simon sharply.
No, but even without a conviction, it adds up to a damning link. So I'll ask you again. Do you know why Giles Osborne transferred the £46,000 to Igor Kucherov?
Simon sat back, looking rattled.
My client has no comment.
Right, said Erica.
She gave Peterson a look, and they both stood.
And?
Asked the solicitor.
We're suspending this interview for the time being, said Erica.
What time did you say it was?
Asked Simon.
It's 12:15 p.m.,
said Erica.
I'd like to talk to Linda, now, he said.
Erica ignored him as she and Peterson left the interview room.
Chapter 64.
He looks like he's going a bit nuts in there,
said Moss, when they were back in the observation suite. They looked at the four screens. Simon was in the middle of a rant about that bitch policewoman, having no right to deny him access to his daughter.
Perhaps they all need to sweat it out for a bit, said Peterson.
Yes, but remember, we've only got them for 24 hours. If we can't charge them, then we have to let them go.
If only we could rearrest Kucherov for the murder of Nadia Greco, said Moss.
We don't have any new evidence, and our time wouldn't be used effectively trying.
We need to get him on this link with the money from Simon and Giles, said Erica.
And Linda is the link to Andrea and Igor.
On the next screen, Linda was now sitting with her head on the table of the interview room, absent-mindedly tracing circles on the scratched tabletop. On the screen below, Igor sat back, legs splayed, resting his head against the wall. Giles remained impassive too, sitting in his chair and looking around, almost as if a waiter had forgotten his order.
"Let's take a few minutes," said Erica.
She grabbed her cigarettes and made her way outside. When she came out onto the steps of the front entrance, Diana Douglas Brown was just lighting up a cigarette. She stood at the bottom of the steps and wore a long black fur coat. Her hair was immaculately blow-dried and feathered around her exhausted face. Erica was about to turn and go back inside when Diana noticed her.
"DCI Foster, what's happening?"
"We're conducting our interviews," said Erica, with an air of finality. She went to go back indoors, but Diana said,
"Please, would you give this to Linda?"
She reached into the folds of her coat and held out a tiny stuffed cat on a key ring. It was black with soft brown eyes and a tiny piece of faded pink material for a tongue.
"I'm afraid I can't, I'm sorry," said Erica. "Please, you don't understand. Linda needs familiarity."
Diana took a drag on her cigarette. "When I gave birth to her, she was starved of oxygen. She has emotional problems. She can't cope with the world." The last part was almost shouted.
"Our duty sergeant can have a doctor here within minutes, but Linda is fine, I promise you. We just want to ask her some questions."
Diana burst into tears. She bowed her head and her hair fell forward, covering her face. She brought the tiny stuffed cat to her face and sobbed. Erica turned and went back into the reception area.
"It checks out," said Crane, meeting her when she arrived back in the incident room. "I have a passenger manifest saying Igor Kucherov left the country on December 31st from London Luton Airport on a flight to Romania. He flew back on January 15th.
"Shit," said Erica.
All eyes turned to her.
"What if he did something in between? Have you got CCTV evidence of him walking through the departure gate?"
she added.
"Boss, this is information from Passport and Immigration."
"I know, but we've got stuff here from the CPS and court records which have been altered. It shows Igor Kucherov was given some special treatment during a trial. Someone has been in an altered official records. Could he have come back on a bus, a car or a coach, and then gone back and..."
Crane scratched his head. "It's feasible, boss, I suppose."
"Let's stop supposing and find out. I want pictures from passport control, CCTV when he arrived in Romania, a digital footprint confirming that Igor Kucherov left the country on December 31st and came back on January the 15th.
"Yes, boss.
And remember, the clock is ticking," said Erica, looking at her watch. "We've got 19 hours.
Erica came back outside and met Peterson and Moss in the corridor. She told them that Igor Kucherov could have been out of the country when Andrea vanished.
"So this means that he didn't kill Andrea or Ivy. We can't pin him directly to their murders," said Moss.
Erica shook her head.
"What about the other girls?
Tatiana Ivanova, Mirka Bratova and Karolina Todorova. We have the dates when they were discovered. Can we find out where he was?" asked Peterson.
"There are only loose forensics for the first three girls and for the times when they vanished. Besides, I came out publicly and linked those three murders with Andrea and Ivy, and I believe they are linked.
Unless it's a copycat?"
"Jesus, this is just so complicated," said Erica, rubbing her face.
She saw a look pass between Moss and Peterson.
"What is it? Spit it out."
"Simon Douglas Brown's solicitor is really kicking off. He's been trying to phone the assistant commissioner," explained Moss.
"He's trying to phone Oakley?"
"Yes.
And it wasn't through the switchboard. He has Oakley's direct line."
"Did he get through?"
"No, not yet. Oakley is away on a mini break."
"He's on a mini break. Marsh is wining and dining his wife on a painting holiday. Who the hell is in charge around here?"
"Well, boss, technically you are," explained Peterson.
"Good point.
Okay, well, let's have a crack at Giles Osborne, said Erica determinedly.
Chapter 65. Giles Osborne sat in the interview room with an embittered face as Erica and Peterson filed in with Giles Osborne's solicitor, another grey man in a good suit called Philip Saunders. After Erica had read out the formalities for the tape, she put the same questions to Giles, asking about the £46,000 he had received from Simon Douglas Brown, and why he had then transferred it to Mercury Investments, owned by Igor Kucherov. Giles leaned towards his solicitor, his mouth close to the man's ear, murmuring,
"My client would need to appraise his accounts fully to answer on this matter," said the solicitor.
"Here's the bank statements," said Erica, pushing them across the table. "You can clearly see the money coming into one account and going out to the other. How much more do you need to appraise? Mercury Investments is a landscape gardening company. Yucca events have very little in the way of gardens."
Giles tapped his finger to his lips, pausing. Finally, he said, "I believe that the money was used to source a rare tree from New Zealand."
"What?"
said Peterson. "I wanted it to be the centrepiece of my courtyard, the tree. I forget its name," said Giles smoothly. "I can, in due course, produce an invoice with proof of this. You are aware that Mr. Kucherov owns a landscape gardening business?"
"Yes," said Erica.
"Then, mystery solved. That is why I transferred £46,000 to his account. He trims hedges and mows lawns, albeit on a large scale," said Erica.
"And Simon Douglas Brown has no knowledge of this deal," added Peterson.
"And why would he? He was a sleeping partner. We agreed he would buy a certain amount of shares, making him a part owner in Yucca Events. I believe he now owns 13.8%, to be precise. But as you can see, I can't access that information because you dragged me out of bed first thing in the morning and confiscated my devices."
Giles smiled at Eric sarcastically. "How were you introduced to Igor Kucherov?" asked Erica.
"Through Andrea," he said.
"And you are aware that Andrea was involved in a sexual relationship with Kucherov?"
"At the time, no. You since show me photographs, of course."
"Do you know how Andrea met Igor Kucherov?"
"I think she said something about a friend. Barbara something."
"Kardoshova. Barbara Kardoshova."
"I think so, yeah."
"And did you know that Barbara Kardoshova was involved in a relationship with Igor Kucherov?"
Giles looked baffled and shook his head. "My client has answered your questions in relation to the £46,000 investment. I don't see why he has to answer questions about the friend of his fiancée's private relationships," said the solicitor.
Erica and Peterson stared at Giles across the table.
"That's all for now," said Erica.
"And my client can leave?"
asked the solicitor.
"I didn't say that."
Erica and Peterson stood up.
"And what now?"
asked the solicitor.
"We'll be back," said Erica.
They filed out into the corridor and back to the observation suite.
"Bloody hell," said Erica, eyeing Moss and Peterson. "Do you think the rare tree bullshit will fly in court if we got there?"
asked Moss, who had been watching everything on the screens.
"We've seen his office, full of pretentious touches. It fits with what he's saying," sighed Peterson.
"Yes, but where is the tree?" asked Erica. "The money was paid over a year ago."
"Maybe they're waiting for it to grow," remarked Moss darkly.
There was a knock on the door of the observation suite. It was Wolf.
"Boss, I've got Marsh on the phone. He's demanding to talk to you. He's in his car on his way back to London."
"Does he say where he is?"
"Still in Devon," said Wolf. "Tell him you can't find me."
"Boss, he knows you're interviewing them all."
"Use your brain, Wolf. Make something up. I'll face the consequences. Just get us more time."
"Yes, boss," said Wolf. When he'd gone, they looked back at the screens.
"Let's see what Igor has to say about this," said Erica. "And then let's bring Linda into the mix."
Chapter 66.
"He wanted me to find a tree for his office," said Igor, sitting back in his chair and stretching his arms above his head. Erica noticed he had yellow patches under his arms and that the interview room was now starting to smell of stale sweat.
"And you can do that in your capacity as a landscape gardener?"
asked Erica. This is London. Most people want crazy stuff in their gardens. And with the internet, it's easy.
Why is the company in your wife's name?
It just is.
And who introduced you to Giles?
Asked Peterson, even though they knew the answer.
Andrea, of course, Igor grinned.
And does your wife know about Andrea?
What do you think?
Did she know about your relationship with Barbara Kardosheva?
My wife is a good woman.
What does that mean? She knows when to keep her mouth shut, looks the other way.
Does she know you are involved in the trafficking of young Eastern European girls to London, that you pick them up at Victoria Coach Station?
Asked Erica.
My client doesn't have to answer these questions. This is mere speculation. You have no evidence,
interrupted the solicitor.
We have a recorded interview with Barbara Kardosheva where she states all of this, and that you murdered Nadia Greco.
And where is this witness? Asked the solicitor.
She committed suicide shortly after the interview, said Erica, watching Igor. She was so scared of speaking the truth about you that she killed herself.
I hardly call that a credible witness, a suicidal woman, and this wasn't a sworn deposition, said the solicitor.
Igor sat back in his chair, smug and confident.
Igor's solicitor continued, Whilst you have been flitting between interview rooms, I took the opportunity to review the trial documents in question. What you claim is nothing more than that, a claim. Great swathes of the trial records have been redacted. From a legal standpoint, they don't exist. You realize that very soon you are going to have to charge my client. Time is ticking, Miss Foster.
It's DCI, Foster, said Erica, trying to hide her frustration. She added that she was suspending the interview, and after reading out the timestamp for the tape, she and Peterson left.
Chapter 67
Erica, Moss and Peterson were about to file into interview room 3 to speak to Linda when the solicitor reminded them that legally their suspects were due a meal break. An hour later and it was late afternoon. The day seemed to be vanishing.
Linda, do you know why we've arrested you? Asked Erica.
Linda sat back in her chair, cool and collected.
You think I have information? You think I knew someone who killed Andrea?
You think I killed Andrea, or perhaps you think I shot J.R. or President Kennedy?
This isn't funny, Linda. This is Igor Kucherov. He's also been using the name George Mitchell. Andrea was involved in a sexual relationship with him before and while she was with Giles, said Erica, pushing his photo across the table.
Linda stared at the photos laid out in front of her, regarding the explicit ones impassively.
We know he took this photo of you and Andrea, Erica added.
You don't know that,
Linda sniffed, her eyes darting between the officers.
How can you know that?
Because we've arrested Igor Kucherov on suspicion of Andrea's murder,
and the murders of Tatiana Ivanova, Mirka Bratova, Karolina Todorova, and Ivy Norris.
Right now, he's in being interviewed in the next room, said Erica.
You're lying, and I don't talk to liars. Do I have to talk to these liars?
Asked Linda, looking to her solicitor.
Do you have evidence that this photo of my client was taken by the man you state? Asked the solicitor.
Erica ignored him.
Do you remember a girl called Barbara? She was a friend of Andrea's.
Yes.
She accompanied your family on a couple of summer holidays.
She was sweet, perhaps a little too sweet, and eager. Even so, too good for Andrea, and surprise, surprise, Andrea chased her away.
How did she chase her away?
Oh, the usual. At first she thought Barbara was the bee's knees, then her excitement cooled and she made the girl feel like the poor relative. When she joined us on our last holiday, Barbara had lost a lot of weight. She was emaciated. Andrea thought it was the height of fashion. That was probably enough to excommunicate the poor girl.
Did Andrea say where Barbara went?
She just said she moved away.
Why?
Asked Linda, narrowing her eyes. Erica explained Barbara's connection to Igor, and that she had been sexually involved with Igor at the same time as Andrea.
May I remind you that this information has been redacted, said the solicitor.
The fact that Barbara was in a sexual relationship with Igor Kucherov, and that she went into the witness protection scheme and committed suicide is not redacted, said Erica. She noticed that Linda was shaking,
her eyes filling with tears which spilled down her cheeks. "How did she do it?" asked Linda.
"She hung herself. She was terrified."
"So now do you see how important it is that we find out the truth about Igor Kucherov? He is linked directly to Andrea."
Linda wiped away her tears.
"I met him a couple of times at a club in Kensington and a pub in Chiswick. As I've said before, Andrea got loads of male attention, and she was always stringing them along. Andrea used men like tampons. She was happy to have them up her for a short time, but then she flushed them away."
There was a silence. The solicitor couldn't hide his distaste.
Erica opened a folder, took the note she'd received and placed it in front of Linda.
"What can you tell me about this?" asked Erica, watching Linda's face.
"It's the same note you showed me before, when you came by the florist."
She looked up at Erica.
"It was sent to you?"
"Yes. You can see that as well as being personal to me, it taunts the police about the death of Andrea and the other murder victims."
"And why are you showing me?"
asked Linda icily.
"Linda, we've seen your record. You've made it quite a habit, sending threatening mail. You've previously sent letters to Giles Osborne and others. Teachers, a doctor, Andrea's friends. You even sent letters to Barbara. She spoke of it in her interview, which we have on record."
"Again, DCI Foster, this is all circumstantial," said the solicitor. "You are crudely attempting to connect the dots and trying to trick my client into talking. She won't."
"Well, she can talk, or her silence can be just as damning. Linda, it's you, your father, Giles, Barbara, Igor. You are all connected. We have your laptop, and the hard drive is being searched. We've seized computers from your father and Giles. It's only a matter of time before we link it all together.
Talk to me, Linda. I can help you."
"No, I won't,"
said Linda, sitting back in her chair. She picked some fluff from her jumper and then regarded the officers. She now seemed in full control of her emotions. Erica could badly hide her frustration.
"You like cats?" asked Peterson. "Oh dear, we are desperate, aren't we?"
Linda smiled flirtatiously.
"Mr. Lloyd, should I go ahead and answer that? I wouldn't want to implicate myself in a cat scandal, too."
The solicitor rolled his eyes and nodded.
"Yes, D.I. Peterson, I like cats."
"Do you have a cat?"
"Not right now," she said stiffly.
"Do you have any other relevant questions?" asked Mr. Lloyd.
"No, that's all for now," said Erica, trying to save face.
When they came back outside into the corridor, Wolf was waiting.
"What?"
she snapped.
"It's Marsh. Not now. I'll call him back. He's here in his office, and he wants to speak to you."
Chapter 68
Marsh was pacing up and down in front of the window when Erica knocked on the door of his office. When she entered, he stopped and stared at her. He wore crisp white chinos, an open-necked shirt, and had an arty flat cap on his head. Despite everything, Erica had to suppress a smile.
"Are you going for the David Beckham look, sir, or is that your painting outfit?"
"Sit down," he said, pulling off the hat and chucking it on the papers piled high on his desk.
"Are you out of your mind, DCR Foster? Do you know the shitstorm you've stirred up, arresting the Douglas Browns? I've had calls coming in from the Cabinet Office."
He seemed weary, fed up of the whole situation.
"Sir, if you'll listen..."
"No. I'm ordering you to release Sir Simon, Linda, Giles Osborne and Igor Kucherov from custody, do you understand? You've exposed someone in the witness protection scheme. You've been openly discussing the details of a criminal trial marked CMP.
Sir, Barbara Kardoshova killed herself, which means she is no longer in witness protection."
Erica went on to explain the money transfer between Simon, Giles and Igor, and the statement from Barbara, linking Igor to the trafficking of Eastern European women. She left out the doubt about him being in the UK at the time of Andrea's murder.
"You've got to admit, sir, even as a coincidence, all this stinks."
Marsh had listened intently. He was now breathing heavily, and continued to pace up and down. She could almost see the cogs turning.
"What time is it?"
he asked. "It's coming up to 5, said Erica.
And when is their 24 hours in custody up?
9 a.m. tomorrow.
Have they had an evening meal break?
Not yet.
Okay, and they are entitled to an uninterrupted 8 hours rest.
I know, sir. I need more time. Will you consider extending, giving me another 12 hours?
I can't authorize it, and you can. I'm waiting on forensics. They took Simon's laptop and Linda's too. There are also bank statements we're going through.
No, I can't extend.
Marsh came and sat down.
Look, Erica, you are a brilliant officer.
Sir, you always say that right before you tell me not to do something.
Marsh paused.
I say it because it's true. Also because I can see how this is going to end.
You're going up against powerful people here, and the odds are not in your favour.
Sounds very Hunger Games.
I'm serious, Erica. Release your suspects and I will do the best I can to protect you.
Protect me?
Asked Erica incredulously.
Erica, are you blind to how things work? The establishment always wins. We've both seen it. You lack credible evidence.
Please, walk away. Save your career. Sometimes you have to let things go.
No, I'm sorry, sir. That's not good enough. 5 women have died. 5. What right do people in the so-called establishment have to get away with covering it all up? So they can make more money, keep hold of their cozy lives?
You know what will happen, don't you? You could lose your badge, your reputation.
Sir, I've had almost everything taken from me. Mark, a life I loved up north surrounded by friends,
a place I can call home.
The only thing I have to hold on to is a sense of morality. And that until 9 a.m. tomorrow, I might still get justice for these women.
Marsh stared at her. The anger between them had gone. All there was between them was a messy desk, but it was as if they sat on either side of a vast canyon, and Erica was on the side that had the least stability.
Okay. You've got until 9 a.m. tomorrow to make a case, and you'll take the consequences, said Marsh.
Thank you, sir.
Erica got up
and left his office, noting the sadness in his eyes.
Chapter 69. Erica and her team continued to question the suspects, but as early evening slipped away, the case seemed to go with it. Igor, Simon, Giles and Linda sensed their lack of evidence and grew confident, climbing up and running circles around their questioning. Their solicitors were incredulous when Erica announced that they would be kept overnight and questioned again in the morning. It was close to midnight, and Crane and Erica were the last two left in the incident room.
"Is there anything else I can do, boss?" said Crane, appearing at her shoulder.
"We're still waiting on the airport CCTV on Igor Kucherov. I don't think anything will come through for the next few hours."
Erica was reviewing the details of the case, going back to Andrea's abduction. Her computer screen blurred in front of her.
"No, go home and get some rest," she said.
"You too. Are you back at your flat?"
"No, the Met has sprung for a hotel room until I get sorted."
"Where are you?"
"Park Hill Hotel," Crane whistled.
"It's nice. Had my nan's 90th there. Nice golf course too.
Night."
"See you tomorrow bright and early," said Erica as he left.
It was after midnight when she arrived at the hotel. When she came into her smart, elegant room, she felt a million miles away from the case. The distance didn't help. She woke at 4:30, drenched in sweat, from the now familiar dream. Gunshots ringing around her, and Mark collapsing to the ground. She closed her eyes. The last image burned into her brain. The back of his head blown away by a shotgun. It was sweltering. She got out of bed and went to the window, feeling the radiator underneath pumping out heat. Her room was on the 6th floor. And beyond the inky blackness of the golf course, she could see houses, rows of houses packed together towards Lewisham. A few had lights on, but most were in darkness. The window only opened 2 inches, and anti-suicide lock stopped it.
"I just want cold air," she said. "I'm not going to kill myself."
Erica dressed and came downstairs to the large plush lobby, which was empty save for a bleary-eyed receptionist. He looked up from playing solitaire and gave her a nod. She relished the sensation as she hit the freezing air outside. There was a row of benches along the front of the building.
She chose the first and pulled a cigarette from the packet, lighting up and exhaling a stream of smoke into the night sky. She shivered, shaking the dream off her, and forced her thoughts back to the investigation. Maybe this would be that